I'm going to call the business committee meeting to order at 1:47 p.m. and we'll start with roll call. Trish?
Trish King here. Lisa Summers here.
Fawn here.
Brandon Stevens here.
Yasa Hill, Gunto.
Jenny Webster here.
And Melinda Danforth, Gunto. I'm unsure where the chairwoman is at. She hadn't indicated that if she was going to be here or not. The opening, Dehasa, can you do the opening?
Dana Gunjoka, a Surinciose, Ginate, Ohundu, Ganahila Dungsla, Aguego, Skaji, Dwahi Nunian, Guat Nigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nen Yunkinoha, Ohunjage, G Sego, Yunkinulu, Daddy Dat, and Duakin Guat Nigo, Aguego, Skaji, Dwahi Nunian, Guat Nigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nen Oneganos, Hogo, G Sego, and Adiwan, Yedo Hadi Dat, and Duakin Guat Nigo, Aguego, Skaji, Dwahi Nunian, Guat Nigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Gundilia Suha, G Sego in Adiwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Ojita Suha, G Sego in Adiwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Onegli Suha, G Sego in Adiwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Galunda Suha, G Sego in Adiwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Oyunqua U, G Sego in Adiwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Onunqua Togu, G Sego in Adiwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Asanate Gundahun Daily, G Sego, Yonaliwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Awahi, G Sego, Yonaliwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Kajokwa, G Sego, Yonaliwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Oela Suha, G Sego in Adiwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Ladis Sagayondese, G Sego in Adiwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Yodahlo Sunqua Jiha, G Sego in Adiwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Yunki Sota we Needle, G Segu, Yunkinigula Daddy Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Yoji Stokualu, G Segu, in Adiwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nin Gai Nyungwedage, G Sego in Adiwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nain Skanadalio, G Sego in Adiwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Aguegos Kajia Dwahwe Nuni and Guatnigula, Daitinoe Ladu, Nain Sunquai Disu, G Sego in Yonadiwan, Yedo Hadi Dato, and Duhakin Guatnigo. Danito.
Yonko, Dehase.
Yo.
Next is to adopt the agenda as presented. There's only one item, which is to approve the special GTC meeting packet for November 15th. Is there a motion to approve?
Madam Chair, make a motion to adopt agenda as is.
Support.
Motion by Brandon, seconded by Dehasa Hill to adopt the agenda as is. Any questions or comments? If none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, abstentions, motion carries. Okay, we're here today to approve the GTC meeting packet for the November 15th General Tribal Council meeting. Lisa, do you have anything?
Madam Chair, no, I do not. Anything specific? My understanding is that during agenda review a couple of weeks ago, the business committee had some suggestions about items that they could postpone on this agenda and items that they wanted to see, such as the secretary election update included on this agenda. So last week at the business committee meeting, the motion was made to defer the conversation to this special meeting. So that's the status of how the information got to our table today.
Okay. Do you know what the drop dead date is, absolute drop dead is, for the materials to be printed?
That would be tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Is there a question?
Was this also where we were supposed to make our formal recommendations to GTC for the each item on the agenda by consensus, hopefully?
If that's the conversation the committee had, I'm not sure. I would look actually back to you guys.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was.
Okay. I see Chief Counsel saying yes.
So shall we just go through the agenda that's drafted in here then for the packet and just go through each one of the items at this time? Joanne? Okay, so the welcome and opening prayer, the announcements and call to meeting to order, the adoption of the agenda. Number four, the approval of the meeting minutes of June 16th, special GTC meeting. That was a indication that those are going to be deleted off the agenda. And Joanne, did you want to explain why? Because we had this discussion with you.
If you jump two pages ahead, I believe that's the revised agenda.
Yes, we put the strikeout version in this packet as well as the revised agenda so that you could see what the agenda looks like based on our conversation. I wanted to put the strikeout in here just so that you could see this is the adjustments that we made based on our conversation.
Okay. So what was deleted off the agenda from the first draft was the approval of the special meeting minutes. The December 15th GTC meeting minutes, the GTC meetings law. Those are the things that were deleted. Was there any problems with that from the committee at this time? I didn't think that there was. After we had the discussion, we were both, through consensus, we were able to say, yes, those things can come off the agenda until the annual meeting. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So moving on then to the agenda that's prepared for you in the packet without the strikeouts. The very first agenda item would be the Department of Interior Secretarial Election Update. And for the life of me, I thought I was assigned to develop like at least a memo that went in the packet, but unfortunately I must have oversaw that, and I don't have anything in the packet unless the committee wants me to develop something between now and tomorrow. Just something that says, here's what we're going to be presenting. Or do you think it's straightforward enough?
I'm comfortable with either way. I think it's very clear from the placeholder that we're going to be giving the secretarial election presentation at the meeting. And I think we did that because we know that we're not meeting with the regional office until tomorrow. And we didn't know if there were any subsequent meetings that we were going to need to have with Ashland in order to finalize the election details. So I think the intent, for at least for myself, was that we were going to hold it as a presentation so that we could give the most current updated information as possible to GTC, and that we would continue to communicate through our alternative sources such as Facebook, the tribe's website, our Gully Wee Sox articles, letting everybody know that there will be an update, a presentation at the GTC meeting, and you need to be prepared to receive that presentation.
Jenny? Okay. Is everybody okay with that? Okay. Thank you. So the next...
If I could suggest that this the page that's in the materials remain in the materials.
Yes.
Instead of multimedia placeholder, if you'll just say multimedia presentation, at the meeting, look to Facebook or the website for updates until the, on a regular basis. It's something like that, so that it becomes a useful page.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Is everybody agreeable to that? Yes. Okay. So land use plan.
I think from our discussions at our joint meeting that this was just going to be an update presentation because the team hadn't had time to do the community meetings that was requested at the GTC meeting. So I think they were establishing a framework presentation for GTC at this point as an update that it's being worked on and not forgotten about. From that, other than that, I'm not sure what else would be needed for this item.
The documents that I did forward to you, and I believe the vice chairwoman was assigned to receive as the point of contact the documents. So those were forwarded to each one of you, and that was the chronology of the land use policy, three different Gully Wesak's articles that were being completed by the department, and then as well as I believe the recommendation or the updated information on amending the plan itself. And that information was provided to you when the packet was sent out, so I'm hoping that you all had a chance to look at it. And basically what the recommendation that I see in that document was that the business committee is going to do the presentation, as DeHasse just stated, but that in conjunction with the Land Commission, Land Management and Development and Environmental and Housing, we will continue to proceed with updating the plan, and that we will continue to bring that information back to the community as it's being developed. So that was the information that I had seen, and that was what was forwarded to you all for consideration.
Is the document that's titled Oneida Business Committee is Presenting This Progress Update, was that presented? I'm assuming it wasn't presented in July. It's intended as the progress report for this meeting.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure where you're at.
The additional Word documents that were attached to your email, the first sentence on that document says, the business committee is presenting this progress update to the Oneida Land Use Plan to reflect the General Tribal Council's wishes. It contains a background on the GTC's actions, a background on applicable laws, and I'm assuming that the chart of laws gets attached to this, an excerpt from the land use plan itself, and then a paragraph titled Updating the Land Use Plan at the end. Is that new materials to be presented to the General Tribal Council?
That's the exact question that I have for this body.
But it's drafted for this upcoming meeting. It's not something that's been presented already.
Correct.
Okay.
That's my understanding, yes.
GTC meeting.
So my understanding of the document that we're all talking about, which I forwarded to you. That would be great. Lisa can pull it up on the screen. Maybe that's why we had it on. but so my understanding is through the series of joint Land Commission meetings that were taking place, the request was made to the Land Commission and Planning to come back with information that we could be used in the packet. This was one of the five documents they came back with to say, here's what you could potentially use for the packet for the General Tribal Council meeting.
Are they comfortable with, I'm assuming these three articles that were attached to the email have not already appeared in the Gully Wesak's?
I would defer to the vice chairwoman on that question simply because she received the information and I'm not sure.
That's all I got, was received the information because the business committee had requested that because of the joint land commission meetings that we had with them, there was a request from the business committee to have them develop a cover page that would be inserted into the General Tribal Council meeting packet. And that's what they drafted for us. So it's up to us whether or not we want to include that into the packet or not.
I just
received the materials. I am not approving them. That's the desire of the committee, not mine.
I think that the document that's up on the screen right now does accurately reflect the steps that took place. Mm-hmm. I would recommend if you're going to include it, you go ahead and include it on your letterhead. The last three paragraphs on the second page. It is important for the GTC to understand. I think might be a little offensive. That when I read it, it was like, alrighty. I didn't get a good feeling from how that paragraph was presented.
Which one?
It is important for GTC to understand existing laws and policy and how any future land use plan and how they affect any future land use plan amendments. It sounded just a little bit preachy, I guess. It didn't feel good. So I think the information in that is good, but I think the paragraph needs some wordsmithing on it. Mm-hmm. And regarding updating the land use plan, I think setting time limits And the General Tribal Council is not a good idea. One, because you can really never predict when you're going to be able to get back in front of them. And this is a prime example of why setting a specific number of dates is never going to be in your best interest. It's going to force you to hold a meeting that you may not necessarily need to hold at that time. So my recommendation is that if you are in favor of what's in the land use plan and the next steps, that the business committee should recommend that the General Tribal Council accept this report, and that the business committee will continue to obtain and conduct community input, community meetings to obtain input and update the land use plan on a regular basis, and potentially something to the effect of including that in future annual and semi-annual reports. So you just continue to report out to them, because the land use plan is important to the General Tribal Council, so they're constantly updated on
it. Okay, let me try to gain some consensus on the first issue, which is the paragraph that reads, it is important for General Tribal Council to understand, etc. Does the committee agree that that needs some tweaking of language so that it's not so pretty?
There's a better word. I can't find it.
It's condescending.
Yeah, I agree with the concept that was in here, and I think Joanne's correct. I think it can be just reworded differently, because I think the point is we could use a couple of examples, such as Vision Oneida, such as the comp plan. There's other documents and laws that we want General Tribal Council to take into consideration as we develop this amendment. I'll develop the amendments. So I think, you know, if you want to assign it to whoever, we can work on that. Or we can just do it right now, like seems like we're doing. Right. But I do agree. We need to reword it just a little bit.
Well, here's the thing. I'm just wondering, like, I'm not available tomorrow. You're not available. We'll be on travel. If we could ask maybe Joanne, give her more work, and ask her to wordsmith the document for us, make it more. The format seems to be okay, but it's, like, hard to read and understand. It's not lay, per se. And so I'm wondering if we could just ask Joanne to reformat the memorandum, change some of that language.
We can probably get it yet done today.
Okay. And then just send out to the business committee as an e-poll to include in the packet by end of day or by tomorrow morning.
Yeah, we'll do it by the end of the day, because we're going to be gone tomorrow.
Okay. And then updating the land use plan, you're just suggesting to take out the timelines so that we're not recommitting ourselves to something that's not doable.
That would be my...
But that we would provide updates at the annual, semi-annual meetings.
Yes.
Is the business committee okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. Anything else in that letter? Like, it needs to go on letterhead? Needs to say the business committee, or somehow indicating that this is a letter from the business committee? Things like that. Formatting.
I would suggest that if the three articles that were attached to your email were already in the Galiwisox at one point, that including them in this is a good refresher. We would just need to put the date of the newspaper so that the members have in front of them information that, you know, tells them we've been working on this diligently, trying to get input, and that would give them a good idea with those three.
Let me ask this question then. I know that the business committee had limited interaction on this issue prior, you know, because it was given to the previous business committee at the very end of, you know, in July, and then we were going into election, or actually probably prior to July, but we were going into election cycle at that time, and it wasn't worked on by the committee per se, but it was worked on by our internal staff to begin those discussions. And then with our body coming on and having two meetings with the Land Commission, very short presentations, which not everybody could attend because there was so much going on, I just want to make sure that the business committee is comfortable with the letter that's contained and how we're proceeding. I know that the committee members that were at the Land Commission meeting were in favor of proceeding at how we are going down the road with this land use plan. But I just want to make sure that everybody is on board, because we may be asked individually to speak on this issue at that meeting as well.
Verifying that that's our understanding, you know, that we're adhering to the request of GTC.
And I think that will go along with the presentation that's going to be given. The presentation that's going to be given will be focused on the 24-year housing plan, along with how does all of these other elements come into play, like Vision Oneida, comprehensive plan. How do all those documents come into play, and how does, because it looks like the motion is really focused on housing opportunities, so then they'll be giving the presentation on the 24-year housing plan and how we are going about accomplishing that. What's planned? What have we done to date? What do we plan on doing in the next few years? And here's our plan for 24 years out. And then they were talking about the different opportunities that we have right now, the programs, the HBO program, Section 184 program, the elder apartments they're focused on now. But they also talked about revising their strategy around not building new and purchasing existing, because prices are low. It's a perfect time. There's enough homes on the reservation to sustain the number of people that want housing opportunities, and the infrastructure costs to actually install sewer and water. Access to sewer and water is so high that it makes sense for us. It's driving us back to the housing market. So those are the kind of things that they'll be talking about from an economic perspective and how our strategy fits in to why we've redirected, I guess, or not redirected, but we're on task to accomplish our housing plan overall. So. I believe we haven't made that decision. Troy is planning to.
I think we should identify, though, who from the committee is going to give the committee's portion of it as well, so that we can have the two people work together and make sure that these presentations are succinct in the message and complement and reflect what we say and what the conversation was with the Land Commission as well.
Well, that's easy. The Land Commission liaison primary.
All right, Haas.
Woo-hoo. Are you okay with that, Haas?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. So DeHasse and Troy Parr.
And, of course, we'll give input and technical support, but actually delivering the message will be you guys.
And then the secretary election will be myself and Lisa.
Jesus, I don't remember agreeing to that. Okay. Right? I did. Voluntold. Okay.
To come from behind that curtain now.
But I like being the wizard.
I know. As she works so hard behind the scenes, I always gave the presentation, so now we get to do it together. All right, so on the land use plan, we're good with trying to get something out by the end of the day. A different paragraph on that it is condescending paragraph, and then taking out timelines. Good. Lisa and Joanne. End of day, e-poll?
Yep.
Okay. Is that it for land use plan? Yes? Okay.
Next. We have a recommendation for that.
Oh, the recommendation?
I think the recommendation could be something pretty simple. It's just the business committee recommends moving forward through the identified process and current laws and to bring back updates as work is completed.
Is that good? Can you incorporate that?
You know, something like motion to accept the reports and direct the Oneida Business Committee to continue reporting on the comprehensive plan, including the land use plan, at annual and semi-annual meetings?
Yeah. Like that.
Something like that.
Something like that.
Right. I know we're going to have this before 3 o'clock, aren't we?
Yes.
Okay, is everybody good with that recommendation?
Yes.
Yes? Yes. Okay. Next is the under table business would be the petition to pay real estate taxes for all tribe-owned properties.
There is no legislative impact as a result of this petition. There is a potential legal impact in having to redraft all the existing mortgage and land lease agreements, as well as a financial impact that's combined with the legal impact on attempting to identify what that number is, how they're affected, and how it's proven. Some of these actions are significantly old that the paperwork no longer exists. And last but not least, there's a time frame issue in regards to the real estate property taxes, not the personal property taxes that are included. So at this point, from a legal perspective, it would be difficult to figure out how to accomplish this. You can't do it in the time frame that's in the petition, and I would anticipate that if you put statute of limitations on it, so you have to file your request within, 6 months of adoption of an action by the Joint Tribal Council, that will still be addressing this maybe as much as a year later in trying to verify the amounts and numbers.
One is in regards to, it's not my question, it's just what I heard people asking already, and that is these were tabled, the process of tabling an item and then it coming back, that whole process is an issue. Should we in fact be addressing this? That's one issue. The other question was just posed to me the other day, and that was somebody was asking me if this is a constitutional impact, because it's not something that we can offer across the board, and individuals receive a gain from it. So is it, we just can't do it across the board like we do education or whatever. So those are the two questions that were posed.
As far as the parliamentarian question on the rules itself, that question has been asked and answered. There is some difference of opinion from other parties in regards to tabled items and adjourning a meeting. But the difference is resolved when you look at when it happens. The annual, semi-annual meetings, you can simply table an item and walk away from the meeting, and it will show up again in January or July, depending on which one it was at. On a special General Tribal Council meeting, when that agenda is done, if you table an item, you don't say to bring it back at some other date. It is concluded. The General Tribal Council has rendered an opinion in regards to it. We've ended that meeting. It doesn't carry over. Robert's Rules of Order says regularly scheduled meetings, constitutional meetings like annual and semi-annual, that process is that it never ends. The meeting goes on at the next meeting. But a special meeting called for a specific purpose ends as of that date. So it can't automatically carry over to anything. These items are carried over from the semi-annual meeting. So we can pick them up again in January, or we can address them at a special meeting. Hypothetically, we meet on November 15th. They table all these things, and they adjourn the meeting. We are done with them all then, because they were brought on to a special meeting for that purpose. So at this point, the business committee has moved forward with placing these on the agenda. Your second question in regards to whether or not it's constitutional action, the Constitution says that everybody shall be able to participate equally in the largesse of the tribe, in the governmental activities. And you use the example of the scholarship versus this. Not everyone can participate in the higher education scholarship. There are some people that really, they're just not cut out to go on to college or technical degrees. So they are unable to participate in this. I'm unable to participate in the Elder Per Capita Fund, per capita payments until I reach a specific age. But on the other hand, it's the same scenario. Everybody is eligible, assuming this were adopted, everybody would be eligible to participate in it. If you had land that you were leasing from the tribe, typically those lease say that you pay the taxes on the personal property and the tribe pays the property taxes. The reason for that is because we don't actually sell you the land. We sell you everything attached to it. And so you own that, and you pay those property taxes. You don't pay the property taxes on fee land that you're leasing. The tribe does. We pay that portion. Every property tax bill comes to the landowner, contains two numbers on it. One, the value of the things attached to the land, two, the value of the land itself. We pay that property tax associated with that. So it wouldn't be unconstitutional if this were to go into effect prospectively. Now, there'd be a lot of work to do, and there's a cost associated with it, but it wouldn't be unconstitutional. It's consistent with everybody that who owns land or who leases land from the tribe is treated the same. So in my opinion, there is not a constitutional impact as a result of this.
But I think the reason being because there are other tribal members who own land within the reservation boundaries that have a conventional loan and are not working through the tribe for their loan. So they can't even sell their land back to the tribe to get it into trust, so that's one issue. But the other thing is that the benefit of the tax-exempt condition isn't offered to them. So there just seems to be an unfairness in the program itself. It's limited to only those that work with the tribe, and there's an individual benefit for that. So it kind of goes, the next question that I forgot about until now was the member who benefits, you know, like an education thing, we can all vote, and it's for the betterment of the whole tribe. Anybody who's eligible for it under certain conditions, and most people are, but in this condition it's not, and so an individual could be voting on a gain for themselves.
Okay, in regards to finishing up your first question, this applies only to land that the tribe owns.
Right.
That would be a true statement. Regardless of where you got your mortgage loan, the tribe owns that land, and we know what the taxes are on there because we receive the bill. So to that extent, everyone similarly situated who has commercial property is treated slightly differently, but residential property that they're leasing from the tribe because they've purchased the personal attachments to permanent attachments to the land, that's the group. And regardless of who they are, they will all be treated the same. So everybody who receives the scholarship is treated the same. Everybody who's age 65 and over is treated the same. This group is treated consistently. If the tribe owns the land, it doesn't matter where they get their mortgage from. We're leasing the land to them. They're buying the house, so they would be in. This would change this policy in that program. So all of those are treated the same. Again, I don't find an unconstitutional aspect to it. To that extent, that wouldn't prohibit moving this forward. Now, I agree with the other policy considerations that you've stated. That's a true statement. I forget the second part.
A member would be voting on it. For per capita, a member can vote on whether or not and how much and all that, and that's a personal gain. But again, that's overall, that's everybody enrolled. So for this particular benefit, as explicit as it is, as you just stated, then a person could be voting on something that will benefit themselves from the tribe's coffers.
When you're in a general tribal council meeting, the conflict of interest that you're talking about is generally the tribe recognizes that you cannot vote for something in which you will personally realize a gain. And that's applicable mainly to boards, committees, and commissions and the business committee itself. It's not generally applicable to the general tribal council. That body as a whole is has not been subject to that rule because it's difficult to ascertain. The question that same type of a question could have been posed when we were talking about the scholarship program. There were 800 tribal members in that room. 100 of them would have benefited from that should those 100 have not voted. It's a small group of people. It's the same concept. That restraint doesn't apply to the General Tribal Council because there's a sufficient, the body is large enough that impact would be offset by the body as a whole. That group of people could not run that particular action and be overwhelmingly in support of it such that you would want them to not vote on it. It's different from the business committee because there's a smaller number, and a smaller number of you with a conflict could impact the decision as a whole. In that case, you're also acting on behalf of others. In a general tribal council meeting, it's not necessarily the same position that you're acting in. Notwithstanding that, we've never asked them to not vote when they have a personal conflict with the action. I would also suggest that in a business committee meeting, you would also not be restricted from voting, even though you would realize a personal gain from an action.
So, to get to the recommendation of the committee, am I hearing from you, Trish, that you would like to potentially request the General Tribal Council to deny this request based on financial impact, fairness to tribal membership?
I guess I would offer that because the questions that I posed were questions that were raised to me that I couldn't answer. So that was one thing, but just looking at the financial impact and knowing the condition of the tribe, yeah, I would definitely say we're not ready for this. If it is something that we want to grow to, then we put a strategy plan to get there. But just like we were considering the other day, you know, for our budget purposes, rather than budgeting for something we can't have, but budget for an appropriate amount and work our strategy so that by year three we have a sustainable budget that sustains itself. So this I don't see we could do even in 3 years because it would impact that process. But if we were to say like in 10 years we want to get to this point where we can offer tax-free lands to the member, then that's the goal. That's the goal that I would say that we go after, but not to implement it now, or that a direction be given that we work to that goal. It's difficult because of the Bureau of Indian Affairs and putting lands in the trust in the first instance, having available residential lands. Then you have to look at the people that already live, that own their home, that live on fee land within the reservation. So there's other conditions, and I understand this is specifically for leaseholders and dream homeowners, and they're already getting a benefit. So, you know, and some people have indicated that they don't want to be tax-free at this point because that's their mortgage deduction. So, I don't know if I didn't get a chance to thoroughly read the impact statement, but I don't even know if that was considered in there. So, depending on a person's income status.
Well, one of the other issues that I struggle with as well is that when you become a homeowner, you resume a lot of responsibility, and that land management was upfront in the lease that you signed, that you're responsible for this.
And it's well known, like what you're indicating, that trust lands are not easily attainable, that more than likely it's 5 years or beyond that we're looking at, 3 to 5 years or even longer in some instances where we haven't been able to get land into trust. So from my perspective as well, you know, I agree with what you're saying is to have a long-term strategy potentially, but that this would significantly impact our financial stability and our strategy, because those dollars that we would be giving back are going to impact our ability to have additional acquisitions for homeowners to come. So exactly what they're asking for here is going to impact land use and our 24-year housing plan to provide more available housing to other tribal members. So it's, so my recommendation to the committee is to put together a recommendation to deny the request or to look at it from a longer term strategy.
Where the wind is really picked up.
I have a question. I'm looking at the financial impact piece, and I do see that one of the things that was brought out in the financial impact was that there is $457,523, and we know this is outdated, of interest income that's put back into the revolving loan fund or the fund. But my question is that the actual bottom line dollar amount, or is it more than that with the fees and with everything else? That's my first question. My second question is in relationship to the law itself. You know, I know that the real property law was reviewed, and in section 67.15 of the real property law, it states that there should have been a real estate tax code developed by the Division of Land Management by October 1st, 1996. And was that looked at when that legislative analysis was complete? Because I then would disagree that there's no legislative impact if that was completed.
There is no
tax code developed. Okay. Do we know why that was never completed? Anyone?
I know it was drafted, but it didn't get any legs. The tax code itself?
According to the law, there was supposed to be a real estate tax code developed by land management by October 1st of 1996, and that would have identified costs associated with the services of occupancy of tribal lands, environmental services, public roads, fire, recycling, all that kind of stuff. So I guess maybe the subsequent thing that we need to think about is making sure that that's either completed or the law is amended accordingly if it's no longer needed or outdated.
Well, there's also the alternative that it was completed, presented, and rejected.
That's true.
And so no further action is needed.
Right. Okay. That's true. But then it needs to be noted somewhere. So that I'm sure that will be a question. Because if it was something that should have been done and followed, then I guess that's the other question that comes into play with relationship to the numbers, is how do we know that that's what's supposed to be coming in versus what is? And what are we using now to determine what should be coming in because we don't have our own code in place? That's the way that I would interpret that. Like, we were supposed to put our own code in place so we knew what we were supposed to be collecting. And in lieu of that, if it was rejected or not completed, whatever the circumstances was, then what are we using to determine what that is? Now, I understand, according to all the opinions and everything, we're using the most current information we have available on the value of the properties, and I understand that. I guess what I'm just trying to figure out is how do we answer that question if it comes up? Because we all know that we subsidize our program, so whether it's the water and recycling or whatever, you know, the argument could be, if you would have had, you would have done this, we could be subsidizing at the very minimum what those taxes could look like. I don't know. I'm just trying to understand where some of the potential arguments could come from.
And I understand that the discussion, the question is, I'm going to go back to the original number that we began this discussion, which was about $400,000. Those are the loan payments made on a mortgage. Has nothing to do with the property taxes themselves. The mortgage payment goes back to the revolving loan fund to make a loan to the landowner, to the homeowner, actually. The tax payment itself is several pages back.
Okay.
And it starts to get into the millions when we talk about the total amount due. And I believe that's on page 4
that's
of the financial.
That's the $7 million figure?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that is there's two things that are going on there. One, there's a tax payment made by the Division of Land Management on property that they're managing. That's a tribal contribution to their budget we pay out. Plus, there's an amount that's paid by the individual on the value of the attachments to the land, the personal property value, which in all circumstances will generally be the larger of the two numbers on a tax bill. The personal property is generally valued greater than the land itself. So that amount is sometimes included in an escrow in a mortgage payment, but it's not the mortgage payment that goes back to the revolving loan fund.
I just want to make, I guess I'm trying to figure out, you know, when we, and again, this $7 million figure is probably going to be a little outdated, but I mean, if that's the estimated where it was at a year ago, what the financial impact could be, the, you know, in relationship to where we are with the budget right now. I guess I'm going to be supportive of recommending that we don't do anything with this right now. And we, you know, if they want to defer it back to us for future consideration and long-term planning, I would be okay with that. But I think we need to go with a non-supportive position right now.
Yeah, I think we could. I support going along with the, I guess, non-support of the petition, but as kind of an offshoot, potential second amendment or whatever is to have the business committee continue to work on getting the land into the trust, working with Department of Interior to identify ways to speed up the process and make it more efficient.
Jenny? Brennan?
Just to be ready for that discussion.
I agree. I think it's important for us to be ready. And, you know, I think a lot of it we're already addressing because we're already talking about reengaging with the DOI to take clean up that land into trust process. I guess for me, I think we can handle the accountability part of it from our perspective with, you know, and that might be one of the that could be one of the many reasons, I don't know, because I wasn't on the last committee, but one of the many reasons why we're also merging land and housing. You know, it's making sure those processes are clean and that they're transparent, which we might not have necessarily gotten before. Because I do agree that there were specific situations with specific properties. They've been going on for years. And I do agree that that's not appropriate. But then how do we correct those ones that are, those one or two or six, half a dozen of them that are falling through the crack, and fix that versus versus adjusting an entire system with a $7 million potential impact to the tribe annually and affecting our future growth and land purchases instead of actually just correcting the problem? I would rather see us take the approach where we're going to say we want to correct the problem.
I'm in support of proposing the denial recommendation. Does it say on here how many people this would benefit?
I have another question. Go ahead.
I'll go with Trish's too, the unfairness. There's a lot of us here, including myself, own a home, but not through the tribe. So I wouldn't benefit from this. And I've lived here all my life and, you know, work hard, go to school, and, you know, you work hard putting your house into trust. And I think it goes out to a lot of people who work hard and do not want to rely on the tribe for everything. And it just shows our own home ownership and not have to rely on the tribe.
Lisa, you said you're supportive of denying the request,
yes,
but a long-term look. Trish, same thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next question is, who is going to draft that recommendation?
You already got it done, I think.
What's your requested action? What are you hoping to accomplish? Or what are you going to recommend to the Joan Tribal Council?
And then DeHasse indicated that we would like them to motion for the business committee to continue to work with the Bureau of Indian Affairs to speed up the land and trust process. Was there any other recommendation and or possibly incorporate a long-term strategy to be able to get there? Maybe when the budget allows it.
I think also, too, if I remember right, in a discussion somewhere was that I think Pat Pelkey had said that they were going to reprioritize the packages that are going to be sent up so to be able to handle the people that have been sitting here for 10, 15, 20 years on these tribal properties that haven't gone into trust yet because those properties haven't been the priority in the past, and so that we potentially are switching gears to switch that around, I guess, also. So I'm not definitely for sure that's what he said, but it's something along those lines, and I can't remember if that was something he was going to bring to us to consider or if that was something he was working on already,
yeah,
to reprioritize what's going into trust.
Those have been on the list the longest.
I do have a question on the financial statement. One where it says dream homes, no impact. And I think maybe it might be a play on words here. It says, in summary, the petitioner states that members should not pay taxes on land, homes, buildings, etc., owned by the tribe. As the council points out, dream home owners do not pay the taxes on the land, the tribe does. When the dream home recipient signs their residential lease, they agree to pay the taxes on the improvement because the individual owns the home, not the tribe. So if this policy were to come through, then this impact of the homeowner, even though they signed the lease, there would have to be a revised lease and a revised, all of that process would have to happen. So then the no impact is incorrect because then there would definitely be an impact. So I think that needs to be corrected before we, unless it's verified someplace else, but there's not definitely not a no impact on that. So I just want to bring that out.
Yeah, that reminds me of a question, too, that I had discussed earlier also, is that the reason that the taxes that the tribal member pays now is what it is because they own that property. If they were to sell it, they reap the benefits of owning that personal property. The tribe doesn't get that back, you know, that individual does. So that, to me, that's like kind of the line where we sever ties, per se, for the tax issue, is if we own that home and they're just renting it, yeah, we pay the taxes. But if they own it and they could sell it to another tribal member and have a personal gain, we don't get no proceeds from that sale. It's not fair, I guess, yeah. It's just the fairness in that part of it why are we paying for someone else's property? Well, you know, if I lived off the res, then I could say, well, you passed this resolution. I want the tribe to pay my sales taxes on a car I just bought because they did it for someone's house, and that's personal property. It's the same thing,
right?
Personal property.
And I think that's an important note to make, because I think that holds true for the trust property too. Like you can be on trust property, sell your home to another tribal member. That's the only restriction or requirement. You're still getting the equity from that sale. So for people to just assume that they're not, that benefit doesn't exist, I think is inaccurate. I think you're absolutely right on that point. And I don't know how, I don't know if that's pointed out anywhere or if it's explained thoroughly or.
I think it's in the legal opinion in regards to the purchaser sale of house on tribal property.
That legalese speak. Legalese speak.
I try not to do legal speak. I really try hard not to. So it sounds like your requested action is a motion to deny the petition and to direct the Oneida Business Committee to work to speed up trust processes, trust process with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And, yes.
I think it specifically needs to target those that have been not acted upon for several years. But the other thing is, I mean, there's reasons why our recommendation for denial is not just to deny. It's deny because it's perceived as an unfair benefit to the tribal members. It's also a benefit upon a benefit because they already receive the benefit when they get the dream home in that instance. They're getting reduced costs. They don't have to pay taxes on the land, just on the house. There are other impacts or other benefits if they were to sell the home. And what was the other one?
I think that was it. So I think I would assume then my question back, make sure I'm reflecting this accurately, is that one of the talking points that we need to be cognizant of is that we tribal members who, under whatever program it is, if it's because this petition is specific to land owned by the tribe, they're already not paying the real estate tax portion of this petition. So that's moot. What they're asking for then that we need to really address is the taxes that would be paid on the individual property, the real property portion of it. Am I understanding that correctly, Joanne?
Yes, I would suggest that I've included that in the legal opinion.
Yeah.
I believe the financial impact statement includes that also.
Yeah.
When I was drafting when I draft a legal opinion, I look at all of those things,
yeah,
including the more technical aspects of it. I think I would recommend the business committee hesitate before it goes down that road and looking at some of those. It's a technical minutia of the property taxes that the general public doesn't know. And so if someone were to submit a petition asking for the real property taxes to be paid, I would not expect them to know that information. And so I'm not going to hold it against them. I will point it out in my legal opinion, but I would recommend that the business committee not look at it that way. I try not to craft a legal opinion that says you can't approve a petition because of those types of technical aspects. I don't expect members to know that, so I'll explain it, but I won't say that that's a legal bar. I'll simply suggest that there are ways around it, because I don't expect members. If you have a different expectation, that's okay. You can go down those roads. I just think it's holding the bar too high for them.
So there's two places on here where it talks about no impact to the dream homes. There is, because of the dream home tax. Real property tax, the personal property tax, not the real property tax. And that's in the financial impact.
So
Are you going to go back and revise the financial impact? Trish?
Yeah, I think it needs to be revised. I don't know what that impact is. Because it doesn't talk about it in the rest of the areas.
I'm not entirely certain I understand.
In that, on page 3, Dream Homes, where it says no impact, it basically states that the homeowner is responsible for to pay the personal, personal. They sign a lease, they agree to pay the taxes on the improvement because the individual owns the home. So that's what we're talking about, is there, if this was to come into effect, it would impact those Dream homeowners. I mean they would be also receive the impact, the benefit. So that it would impact the tribe, because it's not just the land that we're talking about.
It's not explicit in the petition, but you're saying it could be implied that it carries to that class of homeowner. That's what she's saying.
Yeah.
Even though the petition is not explicit.
Okay, I'm looking at you because it's your opinion that would have to be revised. They're talking about the financial impact statement.
We can revise it to include
only by the tribe. So that's why he's saying there's no impact on Dream Homes.
Well, land because owned by the tribe.
Because I own my Dream Home, not the tribe.
Okay, so then that first part of then it would impact, because then all right.
You're correct in your statement that, I'm sorry, step back. The financial impact statement is correct in its analysis if it's looking at the technical aspects of the petition itself. There is no impact on a Dream Home in any shape or form because they're not paying the taxes on the land, which is what the petition goes to.
Well,
your question and
goes to land or homes owned by the tribe.
Your question language. Goes to, well, there will be an impact if we look at it. If we look at the real estate taxes as a whole, it will affect it, rather than the technical aspects of it. Am I understanding that correctly?
I think so. but she just clarified that it states in the petition that it is specific to land and homes owned by the tribe. So it's not just Dream Homes in general.
This is true.
Okay, so then it's correct in that way. But what I'm looking at is it's a reiteration in language on page 3, A1, no impact. In summary, the petitioner states that members should not pay taxes on land, homes, buildings, etc. So that is not a paraphrase from the petition. I thought it was. That's why I was stating that, oh, yes, it does have it. But it's just a paraphrase. So
okay.
Thank you.
You're Lisa. Okay. Now.
You're comfortable?
Now I'm okay with it. Never mind. No need to edit it.
Okay.
So in your cover letter with your recommendation, you want to focus on three things. One, the financial impact on the tribe. We can't address the financial impact on the tribe in the current budget. The two, members discussing this with the Oneida Business Committee have identified its unfairness, and that you agree with those comments. And three, you're already in the process of attempting to reduce the overall costs of property taxes through the fee-to-trust process, and you're continuously working to improve that fee-to-trust application process. So those are the three points you'd like to make in your cover letter.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Anything else on that petition? Nope. Okay. Next petition is a petition by Madeline Genskow to address two resolutions, the first being that the homes, name, home, and addresses of people who sign petitions will not be published in the GTC meeting mailouts.
Now, the this petition came forward because we had it, for a very brief period, mailed out the entire petition, signatures, et cetera, to the members in a general tribal council meeting. It appeared, unfortunately, that some members who were incarcerated received this list of names and addresses and decided that they've got a whole new series of pen pals they can correspond with. Plus, some members, according to Madeline Genskow, which is true, some members don't want their names and addresses out there for various reasons, domestic violence issues, et cetera. So she would like it, she would like to go back to the old way, that nobody knows who signed a petition. The secretary, in light of that, did not, prior to Lisa, did not quit sending out the entire petition and then sent out just a cover sheet, but placed the entire petition itself on the members-only website, which is what you see in the packet that you have in front of you today, that memo from the secretary that got included in every packet. It's weighing the interest of the members in knowing who's bringing something forward and the interest of you know, maintaining some type of privacy in not having your address and name and address sent out to everyone. So that's what Madeline Genskow is presenting to you. I appreciate her comments. When I got admitted to the bar, my name and address got placed on the state bar's website for attorney referrals. You know, I got a boatload of correspondence from incarcerated people, members and non-members alike, and they're lovely. I don't really want anybody else to have to experience that. So, but I also weigh that on, I want to know who's signing petitions, because they are calling me into a meeting because I am an interested member of the tribe and the tribe's actions. They have identified something that is such of a public issue that we should come together. So they should have some kind of, as opposed to Brian Dockstader, they should have some kind of commitment to what they're signing. So their name should be public. My name was public on the petition to recall the governor. It's out on the internet right now. Public petitions, it's the nature of it. So it's drawing our petitioning process into a more public forum. So there's pros and cons on both sides of this. The question is the business committee's recommendation.
I agree.
Trish?
I agree.
Oh, is there a reason for that?
Well, you know, maybe another option could be, and it doesn't have to be done right now for this next annual meeting, but another option could be is that there's actually just one report submitted annually to the, or semi-annually to the GTC, that just says, here's a list of all the names of people who signed petitions for the year. And it's not necessarily even for any one particular petition as it comes out. It's just the list. I mean, that's another, I'm just saying it's another option of a way we could do it if it's important for people to know names. But I'm not okay with putting out the addresses and things like that. Not that, you know, for us, I think it's a little different because we're public officials, but not in this realm and understanding the consequences that go along with it. I'm uncomfortable with it. I do GAL work, and I don't want anybody knowing, but obviously now they're going to know. But before that, it was like, you don't need to know that, because there's other things that can go along with it. So, and if somebody's really against something that they, you know, you signed or whatever, and there's other ramifications too.
Well, I think just from my perspective, I'm okay with their names being published. I'm not okay with the addresses, birth dates, phone numbers, stuff like that, their signature even. But I think the people have a right to know who's petitioning for a meeting, because in every government, there's always that indication about who and that there's a purpose behind it. It has an indication of where this is coming from. Is it coming from a, because it only requires 50 signatures, is it coming from a particular family? Is it coming from a particular group? Is it coming from a particular entity that's interested? So, you know, for me, I think, you know, if 50 cashiers sign a petition from retail to go to the General Tribal Council, I want to know, I would like to know that, because now I know it's the employees at retail that are petitioning for this, and there potentially might be conflicts. There potentially could be a great suggestion coming out of it, or, you know, the pros and cons. So for me, names are fine. I just don't think the addresses and everything else are okay. Lisa? Liggins?
I agree that the addresses shouldn't be in there. I got two nice fan mail letters from incarcerated individuals who got my address, my home address, off of a petition that was posted or mailed. I can't remember which. And they weren't, like, inappropriate letters or anything. Like, no, I don't want, I'm not going to help you do anything. You know, I just tossed them because whatever. I work at when I worked at enrollments, we get lots of those types of letters. You just kind of forward them on to somebody else. But I do appreciate not having my address out there in that way, because, you know, everybody knows where I live anyway, and everybody can come over to my house when they need to. But I didn't like getting those letters, and they were from that petition that was posted in 2012 or 13 or whatever. So,
the consensus at this point is to remove the names and addresses? Remove the addresses from the petition. Or any other personal belongings. I'm just kidding. Or any other personally identifiable? Because sometimes don't you have to put your birth date on there? Okay.
And that's the other part of the concern. I still think that identity theft stuff, that's too much information. Some cases, just that name and that date of birth is enough to get your foot in the door with something.
Right.
And I just think we... And then what liability? That's another question. Do we become accountable at that point, somewhere down the line? Yeah. I don't know.
So going back, so I heard on this side of the tables, names only, and everything else is redacted. Is that the same over here?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Joanne, are you typing all this up speedily? Okay.
Yes.
So my other question, going back, I apologize, going back to the petitioner on the real estate taxes, I did send an email to Pat Pelkey and Troy Parr to see who was actually going to be doing the presentations for land use and for the real estate taxes, because I believe that Troy or Pat was already teed up to give the presentation. So on the real estate taxes, who from the committee is willing to tag team with those individuals? I know I already have something. Haas already has something. Lisa could jump off and go on to another one. We're on the constitutional amendments, but I could do that one myself if I had to. The one, real estate taxes. And I would say that this one has the most, this one or the stall mall have the financial impact the most, so Trish or your designee.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it's technical.
Didn't we move to the next?
No, I'm asking who's going to be doing the presentation from the committee's perspective. so that we know moving forward who's responsible to be prepared to speak at that meeting.
Okay.
On the real estate taxes.
Who's the technical staff being there?
I just asked Pat and Troy, but I know one of them was teed up to give a presentation, but I asked them who, but I need a committee member to tag team with them to give the business committee's recommendation.
What we're talking about, those 3 points?
Mm-hmm.
That I can do.
Okay, so Trish.
I'm sorry?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm not going to do the presentation, though, right?
No, you're just going to basically represent the business committee's recommendation.
Okay.
Okay. And then on this names and homes and addresses, Lisa, did you want to
do
one?
Okay. Yeah.
And then resolution number 2 from Madeline. Presenters who submitted petitions may respond to questions and comments from the floor at the GTC meetings.
This petition suggests that it is a modification of Robert's Rules of Order. Although, again, looking at the technical nature of the resolution itself, it doesn't do anything other than what we're already doing. I think the business committee, the chairpersons governing the meetings have generally responded to questions regarding a petition by either going back to a petitioner, but more frequently going back to the subject matter expert within the tribe, whether it's the gaming general manager, the division director, or a corporate individual. So I think that from that perspective, the resolution doesn't do anything. It's like the America's Dream resolution, okay? We're all able to participate in it. What does it mean? It didn't have any impact. This doesn't have any impact either. So if this business committee is committed to responding to petitioners' actions, addressing their questions, and getting information out to the General Tribal Council, and conducting General Tribal Council meetings that have open, honest, and informed discussion, you've met the requirements of this resolution. It's really one of the 2 or 3 worst written requests I've seen. It literally asks for nothing at all.
My one question, even going back to resolution number 1, she has a half of a resolution. And there's no full resolution, or am I missing that?
No.
That one page, that's all there is. She generally doesn't include the initial 3 whereas statements or a certification in there.
Well, my thing is that when that occurs, when it's not complete, usually there's an alternative recommendation that's being asked if we're going to legally do something that goes along with the business committee's recommendations. So do we want to include or do we just say an action?
Are we back to this?
Yeah, sorry. Because it's going
to
be the same for resolution number 2.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. We didn't get there, did we?
No.
Based on the discussion, the suggested requested action is not a motion to adopt the resolution.
Correct.
In regards to item number 1. But a motion to direct the secretary to include only the names of the signatories to a petition in the mail-out, and to direct the secretary to post the petition on the members only website with the roll numbers and dates of birth redacted from the petition.
Can we just note in the recommendation that the resolution that's presented by the petitioner is incomplete and not, I don't know if they can adopt that or not.
They could.
They could?
They could.
Okay.
It doesn't require those 3 historical whereases. We generally like to include them, but we've never really forced that question at a Joan Tribal Council meeting.
Okay. And then so the second one, we're just saying this issue is moot. Right? Yes? Trish? Lisa?
I'm trying to find which document.
Resolution number 2.
Oh,
presenters who submitted petitions may respond. So we're saying that's a moot issue. Great. And who...
To deny the resolution. There's almost no way to just move past it without acting on it. The General Tribal Council has generally demanded a resolve, an action related to the petition itself.
So who would like to take this one on and represent the business committee's action or recommendation?
Jenny? Yay, Jenny.
Yay.
You might be surprised.
Right? Don't scare her.
Well, I guess I just want to, I do want to just bring it up, I think, because it might seem easy on the surface, but after we just deleted her one item from the last agenda, or that last one, it might be a little bit of a issue.
Okay, frankly, on this one, you could motion to approve, to recommend a motion to approve the resolution. There is no, it doesn't say shall. It says they could if you wanted to. They may. That's why I'm saying it's a resolution with no effect at all. It doesn't create any new status quo. It doesn't reject anything. It doesn't change anything that's in place.
Right.
So if you wanted to be positive about this, you could, you know, motion to adopt the resolution recognizing it reflects the action of the chair in conducting a General Tribal Council meeting.
All right. Reflects the discretion of the chair to conduct the meeting or
okay.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And
is that
then
better?
We can
make it positive.
Yeah, and then we can say yes because it supports the discretion of the chair to conduct the meet or actions of the chair during the conduct of the meeting.
All
that
right.
Would work.
Okay. Less of a fight. All right. Next is the Yvonne Metivier Stallmall petition.
I should tell you that since this has been delayed significantly, has been delayed in presenting to the membership, it's consistent with how these things are rolled out, that there was a lease, it was an option for a lease on that facility when this legal opinion was being drafted. That lease option was not acted upon, and so the lease was never entered into. When the opinion was originally written, you could not have done what the petition asked for because somebody already had a lease on the building. You could act on this petition and carry it out because no one has a lease on the building right now. It is vacant. We would have to enter into a lease. So it is an option that is now available because of the passage of time. And I think that if it's important to note that, you might want to note that in your cover letter. That says it, given the passage of time, the potential lessor did not enter into a lease and the building is available. It's up to you.
I just have one question because I think maybe I missed it in here. Well, the circumstances were different. So who would actually be entering or be responsible for the lease if it were to be approved? Like who, do you do it with all the vendors? I'm assuming it has to be one person has to be responsible or an entity needs to be responsible and then subleasing it or?
The legal opinion presumes that the tribe is operating this stall mall. So the tribe itself would lease the building from Seven Gens. And the tribe would enter into individual leases for each vendor's space. So a stall mall typically rents 10 by 10 area, a couple of tables and places to hang things on the wall, two vendors. And every year or every season, they enter into a lease agreeing to the terms and conditions. They'll keep it clean. They won't sell this kind of stuff, et cetera. So that's typically how food markets, antique markets, flea markets operate these types of stall mall facilities. The owner leases the facility itself and then sublets the space within it. And all of those subleases add up to cover the costs of running the building, including having someone in there manage it.
Are they even talking about So I know that it's really unclear to me because it seems like in her request they were looking at more of a flea market, not necessarily an actual business. Because I was looking at, like, how do you, first of all, divide up that space? Who's responsible to remodel? So if somebody wants to put in a bakery or...
Okay, one of the difficulties with this is that there are way too many options available. In order to give the members an idea of what was possible, I had multiple presumptions in my legal opinion, and one is that the tribe would operate it. Two, that you wouldn't operate it with any food actions in there because that requires a whole new level of physical planning within the building. And last but not least, that we would make it as simple as possible to reduce the total amount of remodeling available. I worked with Paul Wittig to come up with those numbers. So all of the legal opinion presumes that the tribe is basically the mall operator.
Jenny?
Actually, this is kind of exactly what Darlene Denny is doing with out on 29 Turtle Island Gifts. She rents out space. If somebody wanted to bring their crafts in there, she rents that out by the month, and then she takes care of the daily transactions.
You rent a couple of tables. Mm-hmm. You pay consignment fee.
Already being done.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is going to be, what is Seven Gens doing it now? Why don't we just do something with it anyways? That's what they're going to say. And so how do we answer that question?
Right.
Is it such a bad idea? What is the implication? Is that financially? How much we haven't done in that whole entire area.
How many times have we gotten proposals for it, and every time we get close to somebody else bringing a proposal, and Seven Gens would say, well, we got somebody in the wings, or we're leasing it out, or something's happening. So it's still not a tribal property, from what I'm understanding. It's a master lease owned by Seven Gens. They still have the control of it. What is happening here is they're asking for us to make a directive that Seven Gens lease it for this particular purpose.
Can you even do that?
Because the cake is in a different room.
I beg.
Right? Can we even do that in light of litigation?
Right. That was my next question. Is it wise for us to even do something like that right now when we're not done restructuring where we're at with Seven Gens, and do we even know that if that's one of the ones that's...
To do what?
Enter into an agreement lease. I mean...
As long as the lease is consistent with market evaluation of the property, entering into a lease with Seven Gens for the other half of the Tower Tower Foods portion isn't problematic at all. It's a business. Assuming that all goes awry in the litigation, they might ask for the lease to be evaluated to make sure that we have paid the appropriate market value. But entering into a lease with Seven Gens is not problematic. It's simply a business activity. The unknowns in this, which frankly, if you ask, is this a bad idea, the unknowns are more market-driven that we don't have an answer for. Do we really have a sufficient number of vendors to fill a space like this?
The business plan.
And is there sufficient amount of traffic in there in order to drive people into this facility, especially now that we're past the farmer's market stage? But
Larry?
Just a comment would be we would, I think, benefit from third-party expertise. certainly you don't want, whether it's a sideline activity for an entrepreneur or full-time, for folks to locate in a domicile that equates a struggled venture. We've expressed to the prior committee that that location is problematic for a retail activity. If it's a prerogative of the membership to move this activity forward, certainly even before we go to a feasibility analysis, a location analysis as part of the feasibility needs to be executed as part of due diligence. That location, as we know from the Tower Foods, is not going to help folks generate foot traffic. You need to be on the highway in the city where folks are in hordes driving by. And then the business plan based on the feasibility analysis. So those three elements, and we didn't give specificity to the fiscal analysis because in attempting to engage with the petitioner, we just could not, in good faith, get any assumptions settled to begin even putting a framework on the cost factors for what she's proposing. So we didn't want to make any conclusions based on a lack of specificity other than that location.
Am I hearing you say that you've tried to contact the petitioner? Can you just, in the record, please, tried to contact the petitioner to get specifics
on
about this?
Locations.
Okay. And Joanne, you the same? Did you try to contact the petitioner to get questions answered before you made assumptions within the legal opinion?
No, I tried to craft the legal opinion to be as broad and inclusive as possible. So it would answer questions regardless of whether the tribe was operating it or an individual was operating it, and give the pros and cons of different ideas as well as the spectrum of these types of stall mall facilities already in place and operating, presuming they're operating at a profit because they're still in business.
The other concern that I have is I know that when we look at what's happening right here at the BP site, there is still no determination about what's going to occur on that property, and the community, they're going to be holding community meetings, and I'm already hearing from community members that they want that right. to be the business corridor, you know, for small businesses, right. not Tower Foods, because it's closer to the roundabout, there's more right. foot traffic, they're not in the back somewhere where people feel like they have to go out of their way even though it's only a couple hundred feet. So I think that, you know, there's plenty of arguments, but are we going to be able to convince the General Tribal Council is the question. Lisa?
Well, I think I would suggest that I think by what I'm hearing, and maybe I'm misunderstanding what I'm hearing everybody say, but I guess I'm not opposed to the concept of what they're asking for. I'm just not sure that that is the correct area to do it, and I agree with Melinda that the feedback already coming is we're still going through the Vision Oneida planning process, and if it can be included in that process but maybe somewhere else at another location or what's more common, what makes more sense, I think making sure that we're flushing out all of the things that need to be flushed out is more appropriate than us tying ourselves to one location. Because at the end of the day, we might find out that that location through the Visioning Oneida or the comprehensive plan needs to be used for something else. And then we've tied ourselves into a specific facility for specific use versus let's accept the concept because we think we can agree with the concept, but give it back to the planning team where it's more appropriate from a comprehensive perspective to say let's direct that it come back to the business committee to be included in the planning process for Vision Oneida. I guess that's where I would like to see us maybe go.
I mean, if you're going to give it to the planning committee for assessment or to figure it out, there's no guarantee that that's one of the items that they'll come back with.
Right. Right.
So if you put it in there, then you're directing them to come back with it, and it may not be one of those things that are successful.
And that's what they don't want to see.
Right.
Jenny?
I'm sorry. Do this. Right. Right.
You have to take the initiative yourself to do that. Don't put that on the side of that. You know, if you want to be a craft vendor, go see if you can rent it from 7 gens yourself. Like, you can't be everybody. You know, you have to
I guess along that line, I think we're all in agreement with that. But as far as like what the General Tribal Council did with the last issue, as far as the gaming in Highway 54, that was a qualitative top of the head. I want this.
Right.
And so, how do we prevent that? And so, we do a series of. I guess what is the answer to that? So they don't just say, okay, yeah, it's not my dime. It's not going to be that expensive. Seven Gens could just do these things, you know, since we own them. They're ours anyways. So they just give it to us for free. They're going to say all these things. So what is our answer to that? Because the 54, that was just based off of just a couple comments, and everyone just agreed with it. No fiscal analysis. You know, gaming said there was, you know, absolutely no reason why they should be there because they won't make any money based on certain things. So how do we answer the question and say the process-wise? So I'm trying to get to the answer, our answer to the General Tribal Council, and, you know, how do we get there?
Well, you know, even asking the rhetorical question about what happens, you know, when we do this and we incur the expenses and it fails again because we haven't done our due diligence, which is feasibility. And so then it sits there empty again for another 10 years because we've designated that property and we're not using it again. And our business vendors are now out and potentially owing dollars back to the bank or wherever, because they've invested in something that didn't have a study on whether or not it would be successful in that realm. So that's a question back to, you know, the individuals about, you've identified this space without no due diligence.
Right.
You know, are they expecting us to go do the feasibility study? Because you've identified so many specific things in here about what kind of vendors you want to see. And that was my question. Is it a flea market? Or is it actual physical space designated to certain entities and then we remodel to fit their needs? So it's so all over the place. Lisa?
Agreed. With everybody's saying, with everything everybody's saying, I think these are all really good conversations. But I do agree with what Brandon touched on a little bit more, and which is actually my same question, is it's been empty for years, so why not just put it in there for now? And I guess, you know, we do need to be prepared to answer that question, because I'm actually kind of like right along with that statement of it's empty now, we're not making any money on it now. What would be the difference if we put this in there on a temporary basis or long term until we get a viable person that can lease that space? And, you know, I guess I don't know, but to just leave it empty isn't a solution either. And I guess that's where I'm wanting to say, let's take a look at the concept a little bit more, and maybe it's just not that space. And that's where I'm thinking, that's why I'm saying, I'm thinking that's the compromise, because I don't want to just designate a space because we don't know what the impacts are. We don't know what it looks like. But at the same time, I don't want to just leave that building empty either. And if we're going to leave it empty for the next 3 years in our term, then that's going to be bad on us for not figuring out a way to put a business in there with Seven Gens or working cooperatively with our corporation to make sure that something's being done. And we have to have that conversation from a shareholder's perspective, I get it, but at the same time, is there really a legitimate reason to not do it on a temporary basis until we get there? And I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, has anybody even contacted Seven Gens to even...
Right,
you know
that's
what I mean?
Yeah, that's another good question.
That you might be on the cusp of entering into an agreement with somebody and we have no idea.
I have not followed up with Seven Gens to get latest and greatest information regarding that, other than to know that last month I asked Becky what the status of the lease was, and she said that it had fallen through and hadn't been entered into.
Trish? Just in response to Lisa, there is impact to the tribe if we go ahead and put this in here. One, we're assuming all risk, and you know, we would be responsible for that. The renovations that would take place, that cost, that's ours. So if we know that going in, you know, and we ask for a lease, that's one thing. But again, who's going to manage that? We our retail, I would assume. Is that something that they're capable of doing? Is anybody else in the tribe capable of doing that? Is it just a general lease? Is it, you know, all of these questions that have to be answered. So it's not that I'm against it, but not by any means. I am in support of trying to find a way to do what's best for that. So to help the individual entrepreneur, like Jenny said, there's somebody already doing that, and apparently she's had space available yet. I don't know. And there's other locations, you know, that we could look at that aren't, that probably wouldn't have so much cost to them. So that's why that's the only reason, is because of that assessment hasn't been done. What's the best use study? We found out that in there would actually have to, in order to get foot traffic in there, you'd have to have some kind of an anchor. Our Little Bear Development Center is not a big enough anchor. The post office, even included with the post office, they come in and stop there and they leave. So it's kind of, there's not enough people coming in that area. And if we just want a space for tribal micro businesses, then we should put it in a location where there's more accessibility. So, you know, that's more fair to the entrepreneur than it is to put them someplace just to put them someplace. You know what I mean? I don't think that would be appropriate. I mean, if we're going to put in the cost to do it, I'm not saying that I would be willing to do that this year, but again, something to work forward to.
Right. Joanne, then Jenny.
The legal, I contacted Paul Wittig in regards to the facility. And given the change in the use of that half of the facility, there are required modifications to the building that would be needed. It's not something that you can get out of. You'd have to modify some of the entrances and exits as well as public facilities in there. He estimated that along with the least expensive creation of vendor stalls using 2x4s and pegboard, is anywhere from $125,000 to $175,000 just to make the building permitted for that type of activity, the number of people in there. On the good side, it does create community spacing, and it does create offices for small business entrepreneur that just needs it. I just need an office to work out of. And I don't need anything else, and so that's not into this cost. Looking at the least expensive way to operate it, it was going to run about $125,000 a year in cost alone. That would be one person managing it, the expenses of cleaning, the utilities, and insurance to cover the activities inside the building. And that's based on the cost identified at the time the legal opinion was developed. I'm presuming that the rent would be similar to what we pay on the food distribution half, although the Tober Food site is larger. And I'm presuming that the utilities would be fairly consistent with what food distribution is paying for their half of the building also. So, I mean, those numbers are in here. If you're assuming there's some accuracy to them, it's about $150,000 startup costs to get everything in there, and then an annual ongoing cost of about $125,000. And then there's a chart in there that shows you where your break-even point would be. The presumption is that you can get a sufficient number of vendors in there to drive traffic to all vendors and to the facility itself. And I don't know the accuracy of that presumption. Given Turtle Island being a much smaller facility and still having space available and having captured a significant number of tribal vendors, I'm not entirely certain that it's possible.
Jenny?
Not the tribe's responsibility. You can't do everything for everybody.
Lisa Lyons.
I talked with Becky, I don't know how to say her last name, Demeth, the agent for 7 Gen. She said that there is someone there on a lease right now for storage over the winter, and that she's expecting that they'd be out. It's a month-to-month lease, and they need their stuff stored there over the winter, so she's seeing that they'd be there till March.
Well, that changes it again.
Right. So technically, it doesn't. If it's a month-to-month lease, it's they're there until November 1st.
That's provided we know what the... Yeah, it's month-to-month.
I mean, assuming you want to do it, all it does is delay it until the beginning of whatever the next month is, providing notice. It's not like the prior was a long-term lease.
Right.
So that really would have affected the abilities. Month-to-month is not problematic.
Right, and that just goes to show that we can't make a recommendation based on short-term strategy.
Right.
Because by November 1st, after we've written our recommendation, November 1st, they could be out and it could be available again. And then we'd be called liars for not providing all the most accurate information.
Right. Or so, by November 1st, they could say, this is really working out. We want a one-year lease agreement.
Right. Exactly. So,
yeah.
And we'd still be called liars.
Right. But it's helpful to know there's a tenant in there now. I'm going to go back to offering up the compromise that if General Tribal Council feels really passionate about the concept of this, that we offer that the concept of it be delivered to the Vision Oneida team for fleshing it out even more. We're asking a lot of questions that are the same questions that would be looked at from a feasibility perspective that we're not equipped technically to do here on this body. I think Joanne's given us a lot of good information to get started with, but I mean, even if you look at half of them, half occupancy, even if we could get 15 people in there, you're still looking at on average just over $680 a month per vendor to make rent for that, and that's just on a 50% occupancy, and that's information that's almost a year old. So I don't know, is that realistic, 50% occupancy at over $680 a month? Right.
I already know that if I was had a business, I would be like, no, that is just not a good location. It's been
right.
Tested and proven right. Over and over and over again that is not driving traffic enough back there to be successful. Now, if you look, like I said, at the BP site, that's a different story. You have traffic and the market analysis will show you if you're not in it to make $1 million, right. It might be successful there.
Well, and didn't we just, at the last presentation that we got on the new one-stop, didn't we have this kind of conversation with the Michelle, too, to say, mm-hmm. You know, we had it added in the gaming thing and the hot food thing, but this was part of the conversation, I think, too, was the foot traffic that they're asking to drive, and is there going to be a space designed into the new location or the new design of the facility to drive people for small business or vendors, and you know, then is this a duplication of the effort that we had in the last GTC meeting? And, you know, I don't know.
So your requested action is no, but we'll include this in the Vision Oneida discussion.
I think it's a good idea, but the feasibility there is no feasibility study that indicates that that's going to be a successful location for anybody. And that we would ask them to defer it to that as well. Yes. Well, if I have an opportunity, I'll talk about that. You know, like you've identified this is what we want too, but the discussions we had on this site as well, and are we going to set ourselves up to have two locations and we know one's going to fail? I shouldn't say we know, I just... And it's been proven twice now.
Alrighty. So the talking points in the business committee's recommendation memo, based on the discussion, is updating the status of the lease of the facility, that they didn't enter into a long-term lease, but it's on a month-to-month lease right now. The second talking point is the request such a bad idea? Is it the correct area? Putting in those points that suggest it's not it's not the worst idea in the world, but it is the wrong spot. And then the question about will it be consistent with the Vision Oneida plan and the discussion that's taking place on regarding the land use plan. And is there sufficient traffic for the facility or the number of vendors that it would be or a sufficient number of vendors for this? And will it compete with Turtle Island Gifts, one of the earlier comments? The requested action would be a motion to deny the petition and to direct the business committee to include this in the discussion regarding Vision Oneida and business opportunities.
I can agree with that. Yes.
If they have to compromise, that's the way I guess I would go. Yeah.
Okay.
I think there's just too much.
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Okay.
Unsolved.
All right. Consensus says yes.
2-3. I think that's
consensus minus a half.
Just kidding.
You live with it.
Part of this and part of
that.
And you live with it. Yeah. So who wants to represent this one?
Right.
I can't. I can't.
It's down to you two. Fawn and Melinda are the only two left without an item.
No,
or Melinda has one, so that leaves
one.
Fawn.
Right.
Can you roll with it? All right, awesome. Cool.
Okay, it's printing right now, all of the options.
10 pages.
Okay.
These are rough drafts.
So we've completed the agenda. I did have a couple questions for Lisa Summers.
Okay.
First question, the agenda doesn't, usually the agenda would lay out like who's doing, like who's talking first. Are the petitioners going to be able to have an opportunity to present their petition?
That's why it's in draft form and it's up to the committee what we want to do.
So normally... Right. So under land use, it would say petitioner presentation, business committee recommendation and presentation or something, or business committee presentation. Usually the business committee will say, here's a recommendation, and then the presentation will be given to the technical staff about, like, why it supports our recommendation. So does the committee want to include that on the agenda? The allowance of the petitioners to present their petition?
Yes.
General Chamber Council usually does. And the other question was, were the petitioners contacted to include their own materials in the packet? And is that has been past practice? And, you know, there's been... an attempt to limit the amount of materials because some people came with huge packets, but I'm assuming not.
For these petitions, because they're carryovers, they already have all of those petitioner statements included.
Right. Okay. Yep. So Madeline's statements are in here. Yvonne's statement is in here. I do not believe that Linda submitted anything for hers. But,
okay.
But, yeah, they're all carryover items, so there's nothing else for us to do for those.
Okay.
So I just need to know which order you want the petitioner to be on each one. And for the land use plan, I don't think there needs to be an order because that one isn't actually a petitioner. That's just the BC update. So it'd just be the petitioners, the petitions, the table business.
Right. Table business. Well, under land use plan, you can just put a bullet that says update by the business committee or something. Or presentation by the business committee. And land management or something. Is it land management or land commission? Land management, probably, huh?
Second, are we wordsmithing this or no?
I do not know. Some of them are very rough.
Okay.
Very rough.
Okay, but before we move on to that conversation, can we finish this one with the... Which Which way do you guys want to do the presentations? Which order do you want to do the presentations for each table?
I would
item?
Suggest that we do the petitioner presents their issue, why they submitted this petition. The business committee responds through our presentation and our recommendation based upon the information that's been provided.
I know Linda, she's going to say, I want to know your answer first.
She'll have the answer in the packet. Well, if that's the way they adapt the agenda, if they move the agenda around, then they do. So.
She's the requester. She should be going first.
Yep.
Right. And I can just, when I correspond to them.
Action.
Right, because I will notice the petitioners, letting them know that we're giving them time to present their items, that this is, you know, they'll get a copy of the packet anyway. They can give them the agenda, letting them know that we're going to give them time and that because they are the petitioner, they're going to be asked to represent their item first, and then the response will be provided. And I think our response is going to be in the packet anyway, so there should be no surprises about what... Right, we're going to have it in there anyway. So I don't see that as a really big issue.
And you're really only talking about the table business?
Yes, okay. Only the table business.
Question answered.
You mentioned very in passing, somebody mentioned about a timeline. Generally, with the presentations, we've done them in 15 minutes or less for each one. So I don't know if you want to do that for these as well. And do I let them know that that's how much time they're going to have for each item? Or how do you want to handle that? I'd rather let them know up front. Generally, that's been the past. No? Okay. Let Joanne explain.
There is no consistency regarding this. It's generally how the members felt at the meeting.
That's true.
So it could be you could have 5 minutes to give your presentation or 15, depending on how they looked at it. So I think that if the discussion is with the internal presenters of the tribe, you should tell them to anticipate that their presentation should fit within a 5 to 10 minute period. If the presenters, if you're talking about mentioning it to the petitioners, they're well aware of the history of the Joan Tribal Council, and they'll have their presentation as appropriate.
So what I could just notice them is that we're going to give them the opportunity to present their item, and the length of time will be dependent on GTC's desired action at that point, the start of the meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't even think you need to mention the length of time, frankly.
Okay. We'll just let them know that they'll have time allotted for each tabled item or their item that's on the agenda.
Okay.
And what we normally, or not normally, I won't say, it's what we try to do is have the pre-General Tribal Council meeting is how the logistics of the meeting is going to flow. So last meeting, I said I'll set the time limit. So I asked the chairs, like, you know, just call on me. I'll make a motion to set the time limits on the presentations and however you guys want to roll. So go smoother that way so they're not, you know, Packer game, you know, let's get out of here at 3 minutes, you know, 3 o'clock. So we can really set the question and have General Tribal Council answer it and say, okay, we agree with that. Yeah, we just give them a structure. So if you guys agree with it, no.
Yeah, and usually, I mean, I think Joanne's correct. Generally, General Tribal Council will, if they feel strongly about something, it'll be one way or the other, and you know, I think we've asked for exceptions before to the time limits because we've had important, like the secretary election, we're going to know we want to spend enough time explaining everything as thoroughly and as accurately as possible. And we might tell them up front, we don't want to be limited to just 10 minutes or whatever because we are going to need time and we want to make sure your questions are answered. And so I think it just depends on each item, you know. I don't know. I think we have time to figure that out.
Yeah, we'll have like I would like to have a meeting before, like usually like the week before the meeting, so we just logistics. You know.
Okay.
And in the past, we've done like run-throughs as far as if you guys have a PowerPoint or a presentation, we'll run it through the committee and say, okay, yeah, we like this. This font isn't big enough.
Right.
You know, things like that. So it helps you guys to, and it gets us on the same page so we know it's going to be presented.
Okay. We can set that up.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of already started it with the community meetings.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not so much worried about the 26th one because we already know our position. We already know what our message is. We already, I think what Brandon's talking about is we would do that before every meeting to know what where we're at with each one of the items. I think for this one, it's a good run-through because we use that as the example. We get around and we talk about where we're coming from, what our position is. Like, so we've kind of already gone through that exercise, but we did it unintentionally, I think. But it's good. It's good. Yeah.
Right. Okay, on to the draft that Joanne handed out. So the first one is for the land use plan, right?
Yes, and it's that document replacing the last three paragraphs with these two.
The only thing I would request that you add is, it says, because of the complexity of these interactions, we were unable to meet the 90-day timeline directed by General Tribal Council. I would just add in that the government was in transition as well.
Okay. I'll include language regarding that.
Otherwise, I'm okay with it. Yes, Jenny.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Let's do land use. Land use?
We're on the top one.
Though, frankly, the land use one is the one that had the most thought into it. It gets rougher and rougher. It goes through the document. So, but now, how much time you want to spend on this? It could get more as we go through, as we go deeper into it.
That's fine. We still got
okay
some time here. Okay. Unless anybody's in a rush. So on the land use, did everybody have a chance to read it and any suggestions on that?
I'm good with the suggestions on the land use.
Trish?
Yeah, is that this one though?
The very first paragraph.
Oh.
You need some Reese's Pieces?
Oh, just kidding. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's it, sort of. Right. Vaughn?
I'm good.
That's Linda.
Hey, Jose? Brandon, Jenny.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay, the next one? Is that where we're at?
Just waiting for Trish to read.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I'm good.
Oh, you're good. Okay.
I read these already. That's why.
Oh, okay. So the next one?
Now can I bring that out?
Mm-hmm.
The second paragraph?
Mm-hmm.
In addition, that the small...
I deleted that already. I think that's a part of the next paragraph, and I started retyping it.
Okay. So when we're going through these, are we supposed to state these statements, or this is what's going to be mailed in a pack, put in the packet?
This, each one of these will be on letterhead, and will be placed in the packet before each one of the actions.
I'm good with that.
As long as we're prepared to talk about the budget. I think they're going to, this brings it to a point where they can now talk about it, so. We can address it, but I'm just stating that this. Anything you put in there is game for discussion.
I'm presuming that prior to this meeting and this mail and receipt of this mail out, that the business committee will have said something about pulling back the January budget meeting and pulling back the budget and the ongoing nature of the continuing resolution. That you we would have put something out there at that point.
I hope so.
That would be approved at the next BC meeting next week on the 22nd by the business committee. Put on the website, mailing to the members.
Look at me. That's your area.
Is that what we ended up with?
In a postcard.
Huh?
Yes.
Okay.
So I think at the next BC meeting, you're going to have to undo the January GTC meeting. When you're doing that, you might as well approve the information rollout to the members about why you did it. And that will coincide with this also.
The one where you gave an example about ending health service self-governance contract funds being reduced. I really honestly would like to give them a hint that our projections in gaming and retail are down as well, because that right there signifies that although we had a balanced budget for fiscal year 15, that budget already changed. And we would have been in cost containment already at the beginning of fiscal year because the projections have changed so dramatically.
I think so. That would be an easier one to do. I was kind of hesitant to throwing the gaming information out there, but
or just say, or even just generally, that our revenue projections in total have reduced significantly to the point where we need to go back and reconsider the budget in its entirety, because you already said that right in the paragraph. So
okay, so
for example, we have received notice that the Indian Health Service Governor blah 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 blah, and also the revenue projections, the total revenue projections for fiscal year 15 have not met its target, or I don't know how to say it. Somebody help me. I'm tired.
Have declined.
Projections. Yeah, that too. Okay. Get that, Joanne.
Okay, how about this? Oh, come on, stop. My spelling has gone to heck. So the sentence would remain the same, comma, as well as receiving notice of reduction in revenue projections from gaming and retail operations. Both of these actions would have resulted in immediately operating under a cost containment resolution. So, for example, receive notice of IHS contract funds have been reduced for the next fiscal year, as well as receiving notice of a reduction in revenue projections from gaming and retail operations. Both of these actions would have resulted in the tribe immediately operating under a cost containment resolution after adoption of the budget.
good, yeah.
Yes, no. Yes, yes, okay. So is everybody okay then with the changes in that section for, okay.
Maybe that word a little bit about indicating that this is unfair given, I just don't like the unfair, maybe an inequity or something that just shows, it just reads real plainly, but it's not a huge thing for me. The requested action I'm having trouble with as far as work to speed up the trust process. We have a pretty fast trust process as far as our trust consortium compared to the rest of the nation, really. And I don't think that answers the question that they really want is, I want my individual trust land to go in with everyone else's. So how do we strategically answer that and say that in a way that we can bring it back and say, yeah, we will create a process for them to get your land into trust in an equitable way?
Okay, we're talking about land owned by the tribe that has individual residence on it, not individual trust land.
That's part of what they're asking for. I know that. That's kind of why it arisen, because you know, I've got a piece of land, I bought it, and you know.
Okay, but the only thing we can say to that is there's nothing we can do to help you. The BIA is not at all concerned about individually owned land. They are only focused on tribal
trust. I don't
want
to lie to them then and say we're going to work on a faster trust process. That's not going to answer your question. And just be honest, I mean, tell them, you know, we have a trust consortium that expedites our trust land applications for tribal land.
Right, but for individually owned land, we have no control over the bureaus.
Individually controlled land. I think we just need to tell them that. And doing this is just kind of just patting at them, yeah.
I think that's a good point because I didn't take the petition as a request for individuals. I took the petition as a request for individuals who are leasing or own, who are occupying or rent leasing back tribally owned property.
Yeah, that's what the petition statement says, require a tribe to pay real estate taxes for all tribe-owned property.
That's what the petition is saying. But just like the land use petition, it's saying something else, but he wants something more. So this is just as a result to say, because I can't put my land into trust just like everyone else, so I have the burden of paying the property taxes. And so that's kind of in a roundabout way what they're really saying. And we just have to tell them, basically, we don't have much to do, you know, except for just maybe an update on the trust consortium process and what we do as far as tribal lands. If we get everything in a trust, then we can really focus on individual. But right now, it's not a priority because, you know.
I don't even think we would even be able to say that much.
I wouldn't say that last part.
No, because I think the Bureau doesn't even process individual trusts anymore, like new ones. I don't even think they do that anymore.
The last time we looked at that was like 9-10 years ago.
Right.
And I mean, they're consistent. How about this, including language that said to address the backlog in the fee to trust applications for land owned by the tribe. So that would clarify the consortium. And add another sentence in there. It says, although we continue to challenge the Bureau of Indian Affairs to do better regarding the fee to trust process, we have been unable to impact the ability of individuals to have land placed into trust.
That's it. I think that's a good way to describe it.
Because then we can explain as individual committee members and, you know, the difficulties of what Carcieri came forward and needing more burden of proof, you know, before the 1934 distinction. So we don't have to put that in there, but we can just say that these are some of the things that we encounter in.
Real estate taxes? Okay. Trish? Trish and Troy and Pat.
Okay, so there's two amendments to this one, with three, deleting that sentence fragment, including the last language at the end of the first paragraph, as well as receiving notice of a revenue rejection of projections and operating under a cost containment resolution after adoption of the budget. And then in the last paragraph, including it more specific for land owned by the tribe and including the sentence, although we continue to challenge the BIA to do better regarding the fee to trust process in general, we've been unable to impact the ability of individuals to have land placed in a trust. And then your requested action, there wasn't any suggested changes to that yet.
The requested action has to change then. I don't see the relationship of speeding up the application process for tribal lands benefiting this request. This one. I don't understand.
I think the language that you use in the first part of that revised sentence is what becomes the requested action. So you just said the business committee will, right before the individual trust, you have a statement about working with the prioritizing.
I don't have anything in there about prioritizing.
Okay, what did you say right before that then? It's before the individual one.
Right. It's including the words for land owned by the tribe at the end of the sentence.
Right. So can you say that whole sentence, please?
We continue to work with the Bureau of Indian Affairs to address the backlog in the fee to trust application.
I think that becomes I think that becomes the requested motion to deny and direct the business committee to continue to work with the Bureau of Indian Affairs to address the backlog of fee to trust parcels that are owned by the tribe. Right. And they're consistent. What I hear you say is that the language.
I'm looking for that consensus request.
Yes.
So, yes. So,
okay. Chairwoman, Madam Vice Chair.
Yes. Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. I was supposed to be in another meeting, so I apologize. They're asking me questions.
Okay. Done.
Okay. Next one. We just say not their addresses, date of birth, enrollment number.
Where at?
Where it says it's be on the set on the back page where it says the names of members, not their addresses, enrollment numbers, phone numbers. Date of birth.
So we recommend that the names of members, not their addresses.
Dates of birth. Dates of birth, enrollment numbers. Phone numbers. Yeah, name only. You just say that too. The names of members are only to be included in the GTC meeting council or GTC meeting materials.
Boy, that's a long sentence.
Right. So the name of members are only included. Or something like
we
that.
Recommend that only the names of members be included in the General Tribal Council
yes.
meeting materials.
Yes.
We believe
yeah,
people
Jenny,
are right
and,
to know.
Okay.
And also, can we add tribal former tribal secretary Fox?
Okay.
And then also, I would like us to figure out a way to word the members only without saying members only at this point, too. We are working on some plans on how to redo the website information. One of them may be renaming and recategorizing members only to general tribal council material versus members only. That's currently being looked at, and I would hate for us to categorically, specifically motion that and then have it be changed in a couple of months. We're working with Nate and with MIS to figure out what that really looks like. And what it's intended to do.
Okay. I think that that's a good suggestion. It has a name right now, and everybody knows what it is. So don't change it until after this meeting.
But it's a GTC motion,
changing it at that meeting. Let's say that they adopt this motion as it's presented, and you change the website so that the restricted materials are behind another page.
Right.
At which point you have a transition period in which you're saying the members-only website is now titled
this.
X, and you can make that transition as long as it's still in a restricted area. I use members-only in there because that's where everybody knows where it's at right now. I think that if nothing else, you can put in the requested action, instead of members only, you could put in a restricted area of their website.
Restricted access for members only on the website. I mean, I guess I'm just saying rephrase it a little bit, because that change could be happening as soon as the beginning of the year, which is only a couple months away, and then...
Right. As long as it's after this meeting, it's not problematic that we change the name of an area so long as it remains what it is.
Okay.
We're not going to put it in a public area
of
the website.
Right.
So them saying members only here doesn't mean that it's always got to be called members only.
Okay, I want to make sure that's clear for everybody here.
Yes.
I don't want to be yelled at a year from now saying, you never came back, and that takes 2/3 vote to change that to a different place on the website. Especially because people still have difficulty accessing that location on the website.
You guys good?
Other than that, yes.
Okay. Next. Okay. Are you guys okay with that?
Really?
I'm not.
Oh, sorry.
Skipped over Brandon.
With making it positive and everything, but as far as setting up what we're doing, as far as the GTC meeting minutes or meeting law, maybe a petition process, I just don't want to make it that easy. And it's like, okay, yeah, there's a petition, 50 people signed it, you know, we agree with it. A few of these things on here are just administrative things, and giving it a pass, like, you know, I want General Tribal Council to make sure to put the burden on us to see if it's feasible. One, feasible. Two, if it's I guess there's a burden of proof that there's enough. If there's enough substance in a petition that we actually have a meeting. So if there's no meeting, everything else right now, then this petition would be, it's a lone petition at some point. But because we have all these petitions now, we put them all in, we stack them, which is, I guess, fiscally responsible. But say some of these things we're addressing don't necessarily need to come. Like this one doesn't need to be in a petition form to do it. So that's what I want to say in my person.
Do we even have to take it there and just let the petitioner know that we agree and we'll endorse it? And at some point, if you find that it doesn't work or we go against our word, then...
Can we just adopt a resolution on Wednesday's agenda and notify the General Tribal Council that we've adapted the resolution? And
right. I would rather
dismiss the petition.
Yeah. Second guess.
Here's the difficulty. Once a petition is submitted, it can be withdrawn up until the time it gets presented to the members. And this has been presented to the members. They have to take it off their agenda now. The business committee has the ability to not place a petition on the agenda only when it's in violation of the Constitution. That's the only time you can say we're not bringing this forward, or it's in specific violation of a very limited category of laws of the tribe, such as the removal law. This has already been before the General Tribal Council. So you can't take it off of there without them having some action on it. It's in front of them. They've already got their hands on it.
Lisa.
I don't disagree with that, and I think we have to move forward with it, but I guess I do like the suggestion of just saying, let's put a business committee resolution on next week's agenda that just says this, we're going to do this, and then our message to membership is different. Our message to membership is we've already taken administrative action to do this because we agree. And so, therefore, we're asking you, you don't need to take action on this item because we've already done it. It's an administrative issue that we're going to handle at the business committee level.
So they would accept it as FYI?
Or right.
Or
I could.
I would, because that's what I would do. I would do that. No. I would. What Lisa is saying is adopt a BC resolution saying we can do this. And then in the beginning of the meeting say we are going to delete this off the agenda because we've handled this already. And so that gives them the option. Say, this is my basis of doing of deleting it off the agenda. We've handled this already. Do you agree with us? And so that gives us momentum to do some of the things that if we do feel we agree with the petition, we can get it done before it needs to come to a meeting, and then that'll give them the benefit or the ability to hear what we did.
Which point the response is that's all fine and dandy for the business committee to do so, but the General Tribal Council needs to act on this in order to make sure that we protect that right for the future, that the business committee's actions doesn't bind future business committees or the General Tribal Council, that we still have to do this. So if that's an action that you're going to take, our timeline is smashed. You should have taken that already. You should have included the resolution in here so that the General Tribal Council could ratify the business committee's actions. Because the response of the petitioner is that's great, except it doesn't bind you to that in the future. I think that if you want to do something like that, you should say a motion to accept the resolution as FYI and take no further action on it. And you could add in additional language in the sentence, in the second paragraph, add another sentence that basically says, as a result, our recommendation would have been that the petitioner discuss this with us prior to having to present it to the members in a General Tribal Council meeting and taking up the limited time of the members in that meeting. Placing her on notice that, and other members, that, you know, we don't have to go down this route and throw $200,000 down the drain. We don't have to spend 45 minutes on this subject where everybody already agrees we can find a simple solution. And we can spend that 45-minute attention span on something else much more important that only the General Tribal Council could have acted on. It's harsh. It's playing hardball. If you're prepared to do it, I think that that's a direction you need to take, because consistently up until the end of this last term, and having had no opportunity since then to interact, the response of a petitioner is, no, either I don't trust you, or no, I want the General Tribal Council to act on this. Totally bypassing the fact that the General Tribal Council, the members adopted a constitution and amendments to that constitution that delegated day-to-day governing responsibility to the business committee for these very types of actions. Because it takes so long, because it costs so much, because there's so much discussion and on actions that the business committee could easily address, it could easily take care of. Yes, we have a quorum at every General Tribal Council meeting. That is not a question, and that's not an accusation. We have it. But we also only have 4 hours. 4 to 6 hours to discuss matters of importance to the members. And I think that the members should tell petitioners that they have an obligation to work these issues through with the business committee, who are our elected representatives and who have a significantly greater amount of time and attention to devote to my issue, so that I, as a member sitting in a General Tribal Council meeting, can focus on issues that we really have to address. And this isn't one of them. That's the discussion that needs to occur to force these things to be brought back to this body rather than the everything has to go to the GTC, either because that's where I want it to be, because I can petition for it, or because I don't trust you. Having never given me the opportunity, I don't know how you cannot trust me, but okay. So those are the two options.
I'd be comfortable saying that. It's I don't know. I've deleted a complete agenda off a meeting, so I mean.
And you're still here.
Still here. But I think that the basis is really setting that roadmap to say that we have a bigger responsibility fiscally and as far as the time we're spending in these meetings on this is a very minute item here. Mm-hmm. And so how do we address it in the best possible way rather than just giving in? It's like, yeah, sounds good. You know, just don't go against the grain, but we can set up to say we can go back, you know, 10 years and say to the General Tribal Council eventually and say, you know, 20 petitions didn't need to go to a meeting. We could have handled them at the business committee level. Give us direction to address this. And that's really what I want. It's really where I'm going at. Give us direction on how we can handle these petitions when we feel that we can work it out.
I agree with you. I don't know if that's this particular, because it's a bigger, broader picture, because actually the way I was taught with the appeals, with the Administrative Procedures Act, in the section that where it talks about a person, a general member, has the right to petition, it wasn't meant to petition the GTC. I mean, the Constitution says you have the right to petition. You have the right to be heard. The Administrative Procedures Act was trying to give them that opportunity. So, you know, the process is to bring it to the business committee. But why bring it to the business committee if all they have to do is process it on? So I can hear what you're saying, and I agree that if it's something that doesn't meet, that we should first address it, and then it should go to the General Tribal Council. How the clarification on the Constitution is what we would need to address in regards to whether or not that person had the right. If they petition or bring a request to the business committee and we don't act on it or we deny it or whatever, then they have the right to go to General Tribal Council. That's kind of how I always thought it should have been, but we just never were. Each committee handles those kinds of things differently. So.
Lisa? And actually, I kind of see it where I see what Brandon's talking about, and I think this is a good item to have that conversation on because it's already occurred. The names were published, and then the complaint was brought forward to say, this is what occurred as a result of publishing those names. Now we're going to go back to redacting the information. So it was already put out there, then it was redacted. So I think it's already occurred, and I think this is an opportunity to have that conversation about, you could have just asked us. We already did it. The previous committee already did it. We could have easily just have done the same thing. And, in fact, as a matter of fact, in the talking points, because I understand what you're saying about the timelines, but in the talking points, as a matter of fact, we agreed so much that we actually passed a BC resolution that said we're not going to do it anymore. So I think it is a good example of saying what you're talking about because it's already occurred. And so I think this is an opportunity on a simple item that sets a standard for that, saying, hey, yeah, we can have a cooperative relationship, because we have another one coming up that I'm in charge of talking with the petitioner about first, because we have to strategize around Sustain Oneida and constitutional amendments in the future. So I think this conversation sets up future conversations on potentially harder items that we could have those conversations around first, and really making sure that we're in alignment with what we're trying to do comprehensively versus coming to a meeting and then kind of maybe getting sideways on something and then going back and spending all kinds of money on having a conversation that we could have had in to begin with.
Okay, but we're talking about the next one.
I'm sorry.
I think that's good. It's something that we can bring into this also. But we were talking about the petitioner's right to answer questions.
Oh, sorry, I thought we were talking about the one before.
It still applies.
It does still apply. So based on that discussion...
You guys moved on without us. Right? I was on the last one yet.
Oh. Welcome aboard.
Okay.
So the proposed language then to add to that second sentence, paragraph that's just a sentence, as a result, our recommendation would have been that the petitioner discuss this with us prior to having to present it to the members in a general tribal council meeting and taking up the limited time of the members in that meeting. We believe that is our responsibility and is delegated by the members when it adopted to the amendments to the Constitution creating the Oneida Business Committee and when it adopted the descriptions for our job descriptions for our positions in 1994. That's what we're supposed to do.
Sure.
Yes.
Yes.
What?
Good now. All right.
As the requested action then would change, motion to accept the petition as FYI and take no further action.
Okay. Yes.
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 Yes. Trish?
Would something be in, I don't know if something would
Trish.
Be in
she
the
speak.
In the description saying that this resolution essentially has no effect because it's just saying it's a good idea basically. That's kind of the justification of why we're doing it, because it says may, you know, do it. Right now we can may all we want, the way it's not forcing us
may
to do
not.
Anything.
All righty, so let me try to craft a sentence for that first paragraph. Okay. As written, the resolution does not contain any directives and simply reinforces the existing procedures of the General Tribal Council meeting.
Yeah.
Good enough for me.
Yeah.
Yes.
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 I finally got tired of trying to type correctly.
Okay.
Are we on to the next one now? The seven, the stall mall.
Yes.
That one needs work.
A lot. I ran out of time. I just tried to get all the talking points in there.
Okay.
So I guess the request would be, have we gotten all of the talking points all crafted and then send it around for approval through Lisa's office?
Yeah, actually work with April because we're going to be all of us are going to be gone now all day tomorrow. So work it with
all of us? What are we doing
well,
tomorrow?
Joanne, myself, and Melinda will be gone
now where am I going?
All day tomorrow to Ashland. So if you can just give it to April and she'll circulate it. And then we'll just have to make sure if we can get the response by noon, because then the packet's going to have to be assembled in the afternoon and sent to printing. So
okay.
If you have a second person in the law office that can help with that, maybe that'll be better.
What I can do is all of the ones you've already approved, I'll accept all these changes and email them over to either April or Lisa to put on your letterhead.
Okay.
So it'll go on your letterhead in memorandum format from the business committee too. So if there's a motion today to approve all of those recommendations to be placed in the packet. then they're all approved and ready to go. They just need to be formatted properly.
Okay. Is that okay with everybody? All right. That completes our agenda. So, oh, Lordy.
You need that motion then?
A motion. Yep. So a motion to approve the packet with the understanding that there will be an e-poll sent out on the Stallmall petition response by the business committee. Otherwise, everything else is approved as drafted.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Okay, motion by Lisa.
Second.
Seconded by Fawn. Any comments or questions? If none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Trish, seconded by Brandon to adjourn at 4:32. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Good work.
Thank you, everyone, for all of your hard work.
Working session. You should get a thingy thing.